Welcome back. This is podcast number 33, entitled Fat Kids and Fasting. As you must know, my name is Kelly Gregg of Kelly Gregg, G-R-E-G-G, of kellygregg.com, and this is the continuing podcast of the chapters of the book Diet and Health. This is kind of like an audiobook, although I don't follow the script exactly. I prefer you buy my book, Diet and Health, on Amazon or at my website. Usually I encourage people to buy the paperback, as the book is more of a reference book. Remember, although people call me Dick Gregg, and I have a doctor in mycology from a correspondence course in the Caribbean islands, I am not a licensed physician, so don't take anything I say in this podcast as medical advice. This is a slightly difficult subject, as you cannot find many studies about fasting in children. There may be a few studies on starving, but we are interested in fasting. Most of us realize that fasting may not be a good idea when children are rapidly growing. It would be difficult to stop children from eating during that phase. When children are growing, they get hungry. You do not have to do anything. Their body directs the consumption of nutrients during a growth phase. It is like the first part of most adults' life. They simply eat when they are hungry and stop when they are not, and their weight remains almost the same. Although in children, it is not the weight, but the BMI that remains the same. I discussed this subject before, as something in the modern diet causes this mechanism to go awry. What has happened is insulin resistance. Now we are on an upward spiral of BMI unless we do something about it. A teenager's body tells them they are hungry and they eat. We are not going to restrict calories in growing children. We may change the food they eat, but like the historical diet, we want them to eat when they are hungry and not eat when they are not. Even though we are not going to restrict calories in children, we still have a lot of wiggle room. Let's agree that children are not just small adults. That is why we have the specialty of pediatrics. The continuing question in society is, when does someone become an adult? In restaurants and movie theaters, we use the age of 12 as the dividing line. Bar mitzvah occurs at age 13, driving starts at age 16, you can sign a contract and join the army at age 18, and of course, theoretically, you start drinking alcohol at age 21. Your full height growth may be around 23, your brain growth may be 25. Physically, you probably reach full growth at age 30. Different cultures make different decisions. Historically, the most practical was that when you were able to get pregnant or working as an adult, you were an adult. This all may be interesting, but right now I am concerned about fat kids. In all of history, children started eating at the adult table around age 3. They may have required a slightly different diet before then, but at the adult table they ate the same food, only less. They were eating the same as their parents. In this present time, we are at the point that about 30% of children are overweight or obese. That may be slightly better than the 40% of adults who are overweight or obese, but still more than was common in most of history. This makes some sense, as the children are eating the same thing as the adults. But like adults, the problem may be not only how much they eat, but also what they eat, when they eat, and when they do not eat. I am going to assume that about the age of 8, the metabolic systems in their body are similar to adults, and they react the same way to insulin, leptin, glucagon, and fructose as adults do. I have no research from anyone to back this assumption, but for my purposes in the book, I'm going to say 8. If you are an obese child, you may have some elevation of your blood glucose over what would be normal for your age. Maybe you have a slightly higher insulin level than the rest of your age group. I'm not certain of that, but I do know that like adults, you cannot get obese without insulin shoving glucose into fat cells. Now we need to talk a little about genetics. It's easy to say that if you have fat parents and the children are eating the same food they do, you may get fat kids. It appears to be more complicated than that. A lot of studies have been done trying to find the fat gene. We know that fat parents often have fat kids, but when did this start? There did not used to be 30% fat children, just like there didn't used to be 40% fat adults. Did some global mutation take place in Western civilization in the last 100 years, such that now these children have some type of genetic defect? Several genes have been uncovered that may contribute to the propensity to get fat, but there is no gene, with rare exceptions, that we can point to and say you will be fat. We cannot do prenatal genotyping and say this child would be fat, so we need to change this gene in the blastocyst so that this will not happen. I can be more predictive as to who will get fat just by looking at a family portrait. Most of the time, there are multiple genes involved in a complex trait. Environmental factors appear to play a much more important role. It is even more complicated now that we recognize the role of epigenetics. Epigenetics is the study of non-genetic influences on gene expression. Essentially, we have heritable changes in the expression of certain genes while leaving the gene itself unchanged. Some parts of the DNA may be activated or suppressed, but the DNA itself is not changed. If we change the DNA, that would be a mutation. The most often example used to demonstrate this involves children born during the Dutch famine, 1944 to 1945. These children have increased rates of obesity and coronary heart disease after maternal exposure to famine. The mother's DNA was the same, the children's DNA matched the mother's, yet the adult children manifested their DNA differently. The environment in the womb affected the expression of DNA in the adult. There are other examples of how exposure in a womb affects subsequent adults. Mothers exposed to air pollution have children with an increased risk of asthma. Epigenetic changes do not just occur in the womb, but throughout the life of the adult. Identical twins may have different physical and metabolic traits as adults, regardless of the same DNA. This makes perfect sense from your body's point of view. It is a slow process to change your DNA, and the effect may not be seen for a long time. If you are nutrition-deprived in the womb, it may be a good idea to change the expression of a gene to give you a better survival chance. Since the famine may be temporary, we do not want to change it permanently, only for a generation or two. This is more reasonable than a worldwide mutation to make people fat. We are looking at a couple generations instead of 1,000 years. Why has obesity increased in the last 75 years? Unlike famine, adults and children have been exposed to the modern Western diet, increased stress, increased sugar, increased high fructose corn syrup, increased availability for almost any food at any time, and the diminishment of abject poverty such that few people in developed countries are actually starving. Epigenetic changes are induced all the time and have been for the last 5,000 years. What kind of changes are we inducing with our modern diet? Okay, so parents get fat on their own, and their children may have a propensity to get fat. What now? Many very smart people have labored to get a better understanding of this complex subject, but what do we do? The answer always seems to be the same: eat right and exercise more. That sounds nice, but why don't you just tell people to lose weight? If I wanted someone to fast, why don't I just say don't eat? I've already tried to answer this question in the Fear of Fasting chapter. This book is primarily aimed at adults, but there is some application to children. Both adults and the children at the adult table need to be on a proper maintenance diet. I will address this issue later in the book and how this diet applies to children. One aspect of this diet, and a theme throughout the book, is the 12 hours fast after the last meal. At a certain age, the children should be expected to abide by this rule. I'm pretty sure 1,000 years ago, your 12-year-old was not starting up a fire at night for a snack. It is just too logical that for most of history, man did not get up in the middle of the night to start a fire and make a meal. I am not going to give you a specific age to start this in children. You must figure that on your own. But when children started eating at the adult table, they probably went along with their parents' eating habits, although there probably were many exceptions for young children. Now the question of longer fasts, say the 5-2 fast. I do not know the answer. I do believe that the Chinese population has increased in height in the last generation. I do believe this is probably related to increased food security in this generation, such that the children had plenty of food during their growth spurts. Before that time, there may have been episodes of unplanned reduced calories. I do not believe a lean teenager needs to fast longer than overnight. Around age 18, they need to start their own maintenance diet. As I observe the Chinese, it does appear, since food security became commonplace, that there is obviously an increase in height. At this point, they are not exactly on the modern Western diet, but they are approaching it. I foresee a 30-40% obesity, type 2 diabetes, and pre-diabetes rate in their future. I am not surprised if epigenetic changes have occurred since the onset of food security, and I also will not be surprised when further epigenetic changes occur with the adoption of the modern Western diet. So I said I do not think a lean 18-year-old needs to fast, but what if you had an obese 14-year-old? I think we would have to consider the risk-benefit. There is a poor outlook, metabolically speaking, for her life if she does not lose weight. It is quite possible, at this point in her life, to change her metabolic set point and carry that weight loss into adulthood. I have already discussed how difficult it is to change that metabolic set point as an adult, and fasting appears to be the most efficient way to do this. At the same time, a child's metabolic set point may be changing all the time. My intuition is that it is easier to change a child's set point than an adult. It may be wise to treat this 14-year-old as an adult. After all, she weighs as much as an adult. As I look through the various studies on obesity in children, the answers boil down to exercise and diet. They also advise the identification of the obese child, screening for the obese child, education of parents and the child, various programs to provide exercise opportunities or proper foods, and of course, numerous government programs. I don't think eating less and exercise is the answer. It just fails often. I agree there needs to be basic education on nutrition. Just like this book, the more you understand, the more apt you are to comply. But that is not the answer. Most parents do not have a knowledge deficit about what makes you fat, just like most adults don't. It takes convincing, as I hope you believe now, fasting as a part of the diet, not something in addition to the diet. This is the baseline maintenance diet. You may need to have some sort of weight loss diet, now not of course the reduced calorie diet, but then you will need to go on your 50-year maintenance diet. And let us dispense with exercise. Despite massive evidence to the contrary, we still advise exercise to get fat people to their normal weight. Diet is what causes weight loss. I do not want to know why this is always a recommendation. By now, I assume it's just a habit. Exercise can be a benefit in many ways, just not particularly for weight loss. Remember the Biggest Loser. You can lose weight if you cut your calories in half and exercise 6 hours a day, But that is not a lifestyle, and your weight will return. Exercise is simply not the answer. Who gets more exercise? An active 15-year-old weighing 150 pounds or a sedentary 15-year-old weighing 225? One is active, the other is carrying around 75 pounds on his back everywhere he goes. Which one do you think has the most muscle mass? You may not be able to see it, but it's there. For the vast middle of the population, if you want to lose weight, you got to get on the right diet. The child eats what he is given. He does not have a job. He does not go out and buy his own food. He probably does not steal from the neighbors, although he may at times get junk food at his friend's house. I believe it is appropriate to lay the responsibility for the child's health on the parents. I also think it is the responsibility of the parent for the parent's health. Are we going to blame the government or the medical profession for this also? The key to a healthy diet in the family is the responsibility of the food engineer. The last half of my book, Diet and Health, is addressed to this person. You know who it is, the person who makes the menu, buys the food, prepares the food, serves the food, preserves the food, and provides food safety. Done right, this is a full-time job. My job is to give this individual some direction. You already know that if you explain why you are doing things, people are more likely to do it. I have given you a basic background in nutrition. I have examined the modern Western diet and given you reasons why I believe this is responsible for our obesity and diabetes epidemic, as well as other diseases. You have a basic understanding of the gut biome and how it is affected by diet. I am not going to micromanage your diet, but will give you suggestions. There are no recipes in this book, except the ingredients for bread. I am relying on your common sense. The food engineer is not the person who decides which restaurant we eat at every night. I am going to fill you in on the details of this outline I have given you for the rest of the book. Well, for most of the rest of the book. Some of you may have noticed this same chapter may be repeated in the Health Topics podcast. I do repeat chapters over there, as I make ebooks from some of the podcasts that are in the Health Topics, and some people want a written version of the podcast. I would prefer you buy the paperback book, Diet and Health, but truthfully, I make a lot more money if you just buy the chapters individually one at a time.